and I think it's gonna be a long, long time. And I think it's gonna be a long, long time.
Well, not really, only 6 months, really. Actually, less than 6 months before he is in Lincoln. The Lincolnshire Showground, Elton John's wonderful Crazy Night Tour. I'm sure even John Wenham will be actually putting that into his diary in the fullness of time. He's also added out Dickens Out Loud. I'll say that again. Dickens Out Loud at the Lincoln Drill Hall, Monday the 21st of December, 12 noon. Several years ago, Mark Creese discovered a 39-volume national edition of Dickens' works in a junk shop in Liverpool. And ever since, he has been reading Dickens Out Loud. I suppose it takes all sorts. In this particular talk, surrounded by the rare and hefty set of books that inspired him, Mark shares some of his favourite pages and reflects upon why Dickens still matters today.
That sounds lovely.
Oh, there we are. You have to come back from Harrogate, obviously. Yeah. 21st of December at Lincoln Drill Hall. Ticket £6.50. And it's Dickens Out Loud with, as we said, Mark Creese. So, one of the double take aspects, Jane, which I have from the wonderful What's On Guys 2 Spring and Summer 2016, the epic baby and toddler show. Is that giant babies? I mean, in terms of epic, are we talking about huge routines? What are we going for the epic baby and toddler show on the 8th of May?
Well, you could say that it's in the Epic Centre, so
I
it's
see what
an
you did.
Epic baby yeah, and toddler yeah, show, yeah. But I don't think we've got giant babies, but you never know.
I just think Attack of the 60-foot Baby could be an interesting line there.
Why
paves
not?
The way,
so
obviously, for geeks. And I don't say you should give birth to the whole thing, Mary. I just emerge from that base. Different sort of scenario there. Looking ahead, of course, to January and February, we've got the Toy and Train Fair in February. Arthur Swallow's Sunday Antiques Market. They are phenomenally popular, aren't they?
Yeah, they are, yeah. Because they do the small antiques on a Sunday during the year, and then they have the large antiques event. But yeah, it's really popular. It's interesting, some of the characters that come to them as well.
So what's your own particular favourite in terms of, I mean, clearly, you know, the flagship ones are things like Countryside Links and, of course, the Lincolnshire Show, 22nd, 23rd of June. There are lots of other exciting things that are coming through in terms of toys and trade fairs. We mentioned Elton John. We mentioned the Geek event, Lincoln Comic Con, and so on. Any particular areas where you think, yes, that's the one I'm particularly sort of keen on?
If you'd have asked me what was happening this year that's happened, I would have said the Harley Davidson International Super Rally event. There's a lot of planning and a lot of work in that. I think next year, we like all the events. It's great to work with the organisers and just to make sure it's a success. But I think Elton John is just something that, I can see that opening up to other opportunities,
you
know, really.
You take that.
Yeah.
One Direction.
Well, they've just broken up, Alex. Well, they haven't broken up, have they? They're having a rest.
You could have them all individually, like over the course of a week.
Yes.
Like One Direction week.
Nice.
Thank you.
See, Claire's on the marketing case there already. So thinking about that whole sort of sequence. Little Mix.
Yeah, we've had Little Mix when we had JLS,
Oh, wonderful. Just to show the quality that actually sort of exudes in every way, shape or form. Of course, the website for the event is LincolnshireShowground.co.uk. You can follow on Facebook, Lincolnshire Showground. And indeed, at Links Showground is the Twitter handle, so to speak.
Yeah.
So saying that, so Amelia is still convinced that yes, there's still branding in the right, correct way for that particular thing. The Jewels Big Sale, that presumably again country fashion writ large with the Jewels Big Sale.
Yeah, well, we had Jewels, we had Crewe sales this year, and we had Bowden sale, and now we've got Crewe, and we've had Crewe before. It's quite a versatile venue, and we're getting lots of different inquiries for lots of different things. We had Custom Culture last year, which is zooped up cars and body art.
Very nice.
But, you know, we have lots of events and there's lots of things happening. People should just, they can always ask to be on the e-newsletter and find out what's going on. I'm sure we cover lots of things, so there's always going to be something possibly of interest. This is
Siren FM. Excellent weather today. Highs are 14 degrees centigrade, lows of 10 degrees centigrade. A dry and bright morning with some hazy sunshine, becoming cloudy in the afternoon, but very mild.
The truth is always out there, sometimes way out there, with the Midweek Drive team on Siren 107.3 FM.
Not as way out as Ghoul can be, though. Isn't that right, Sheila Jones?
Don't you dare.
As I said, the very fact that citizens of Ghoul are called Ghoulies it sets the scene for so many wondrous things.
Yes, well, I don't know, have you heard of this wonderful website that's been set up, which is about us all getting fed up when you put in, I don't know, hairdresser in Ghoul into the search engine. It comes up, do you mean Google? So this guy set up this website, ghoulisnotgoogle.com.
Well, you know, I think we'll actually do that now. As I do the quick introductions, really, we have the Chief Executive Officer of the Lincolnshire Agricultural Society. Or do you still prefer Director? I'm never sure, Jane. How would you, I mean, obviously, the great leader is another sort of phrase that has been used.
I don't mind. Jane's fine.
There we are, Jane Southall. And we also have Mary Dancy, who's a final-year English graduate at the University of Lincoln, as indeed is Claire Margerison.
And
I don't think...
Hello.
When's the last time you were in Ghoul, by the way, Jane?
Oh, I don't know.
I've never been to Ghoul.
Me neither.
Because I feel we really should actually sort of set up a kind of... I mean, I came very close in the summer to actually attending a fete at Ghoul, but I managed to avoid it and I went sort of slightly up the road.
You mean they didn't let you in, Alex?
Oh, no. Please. Even Claire's choking with the emotion and the thought of that particular aspect, but still, for a moment, I thought we'd have to do the Heimlich manoeuvre live on air, but still, never mind. Mary's obviously in full pain for that. Are you okay there, Claire? Yeah, she will be, so it's okay. Or maybe she won't. Who knows? She's gone very bright red now, still. So what is it about Ghoul, Sheila, that has led you to obviously sort of base yourself and Trevor there and say, yeah, this is it, we are now officially Ghoulies?
Well, actually, because I live just outside Ghoul on this lovely spot where I look over the river and watch all these big boats coming in from the from Scandinavia, bringing all sorts of wood and all sorts of things like that. So you get these huge, great big ships trogging up and down the river, which is really quite fascinating in the middle of the field. And I can't see a single house from where I am. That's why I'm here.
Well, there we are. And we have that question now. How many times have you been searching for Ghoul on the internet and received the message, do you mean Google? Well, why not try Ghoul Museum Volunteers' very own Ghoul Isn't Google search engine?
Exactly.
Ghoul is a unique place. Not only is it the UK's furthest inland port... But the name of the town very closely resembles the name of a very popular and usually excellent search engine. However, with this fame comes a problem. When searching on the web for anything Ghoul-related, the results are usually preceded by the question, did you mean Google?
Yeah.
Followed by pages of Google links, including in many Ghoul inhabitants, or resulting in many Ghoul inhabitants and researchers shouting at their screen, no, I meant Ghoul. I feel as though, Jane, we're putting some flesh on the bones of a hitherto sort of underrepresented subject here, which is important from that point of view. So, Jay, any questions you'd like to put to Sheila, who, as well as actually being a top management consultant and inspired soul in all sorts of ways, has been pretty much a regular of these shows, but I don't think has ever actually made it to the Lincolnshire show?
Oh, yes.
No, I haven't.
Have you been to any agricultural shows?
Well, we have a lot round here,
right.
Which is a very agricultural area.
Right.
So our favourite one is the Oosfleet show,
right.
Which is wonderful. Really, really vibrant and energetic show.
Great. And when is that a two-day show or a one-day show? Or?
It's a one-day show in the middle of the summer.
Right. Okay.
In August. Yeah.
Okay, well, we'll let you off not going to Lincoln if you're supporting your local.
It is true, but I wouldn't be as kind as actually. I think it's high time we had Sheila and Trevor sort of making their way down to next year. And in fact, the date for your diary, Sheila, is the 22nd and 23rd of June, which
right.
would be the 132nd annual Lincolnshire show. That's the 132nd
right,
show. So there we are. With entertainment from the Kids Zone, the Lincolnshire Kitchen, Sports Zone, Horticultural Area, a whole heap of other goodies from that point of view. So it's
yeah.
great. So, in fact, only 2 weeks after Elton John, Sir Elton John,
yes.
has obviously performed in Lincoln
yes.
on the 10th of June.
Yeah, he could stay. We'd obviously give him a ticket, but
yeah.
I think he might be a bit busy.
I mean, you never know with Elton in terms of where he'll go, what he'll do, and so on. Sheila, what are your thoughts for somebody like Mary Dancy and indeed Claire Margerison, who's just come back to the studio? Hopefully she's okay. It's all right. It's all right. She's still walking. She's still standing. It's nothing worse than when you actually have one of those coffee things. It's dreadful. Are you okay, Claire?
Yes, I'm alive, thank you.
Always important.
Exactly. Just help us, your guests are alive, Alex.
Yes,
yeah, Sheila, you've said that over the years, and sometimes we've occasionally had ones who we weren't sure whether they were or they weren't. But, you know, obviously we don't have the last two questions in that particular instance. But from your own perspective, what advice would you give these two finally English students, one of whom is looking to go into publishing and the other one just doesn't quite know, really? It's just, you know, who knows what could be happening, really? So Sheila, the floor is now yours.
What sort of advice for them as they go into their new future?
In 2016.
Something that is very close to my heart at the moment, which is to... It's just to make sure that you're doing what really matters to you. Because there is nothing worse than to look back and think, you know, I wish I had done what I really wanted to do. Don't get forced into doing something just because it's the job that comes up, just because your tutor says that's what you should do. You really need to connect with it deep down in you. It's really got to be something. It might not be, you might not see an immediate link to what it is that really turns you on, but life's too short to spend it doing things that you don't like doing. So at all times, have that. Maybe you do something you don't like for a short period of time as a means to an end, to make some money, to do something that you do want to do. But just connect into what you really want to do. That's the biggest advice I can give to anybody starting out, because it's too easy to buy into the dreams of your mum or your tutor or your dad or whatever. It's got to be yours.
That's very good advice, I think.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Jane, would you agree?
Yeah, I think, you know, you'll all have goals and aspirations, won't you? And it's just follow those and hopefully you'll get what you want to achieve.
Follow that dream. Yeah. That's the important thing. And Sheila, any thoughts or questions you'd like to share with Jane Southall? As say, managing the Lincolnshire Agricultural Society is an effort in itself, I would have thought, Jane, these days. I know you've got a good team, but every so often a bit like rabbits, you know, one way through, sort that through from that perspective. And she's also got not what two Christmas parties to actually do before she even gets a chance to relax over Christmas. I know. So what thoughts can you share with Jane?
But what I would like to know is do you think that we are in danger of doing permanent damage to the agricultural community with the current low prices that they're getting for their commodities? I mean, we know in the long term we've got to be self-sufficient in food as a country, but these low prices now are really, really do seem to be doing damage that could be irreparable. Do you think that that is a danger, or is it overstating it?
I think it is a concern that the prices are low, but I also think what the consumer is more made aware of it and what's happening, and whereas probably a few years ago they wouldn't, just knew that they've probably got it cheaper and that was a good thing. But I think also there's an appetite for people to actually know where the produce comes from and want to buy local, and you'll find with that as well they often will pay more because they're getting the quality. So I think it's... it's trying to get the farmers to get the right price for their produce, but it's also reminding people and children. We do Farmhouse Breakfast Week, where we teach children about the importance of food and where your food comes from. I think that's what we've got to instill in people. It's like Alex says, a lot of people think that you get your food from Tesco and you just
buy...
Or
other supermarkets.
Yeah, or any other supermarket. Sorry, I'm not promoting Tesco. But it was surprising with the children, how many children didn't have breakfast. I suppose it's just... You've got to start somewhere, and I think if you can start at the beginning so they understand the food and where it comes from, you might achieve something in the future.
Yeah. The trouble is that the decisions about these are not made by the consumer, are they? They're made by the middle parties.
They are. That is the problem, yes. But also, I think, as well, people will sometimes look somewhere else and buy a different product, not just the cheapest.
Yeah, no, I agree. Mm. I think there is much more understanding that we've got to pay a wee bit more.
Yeah.
I just worry that we're going to see irreparable harm done.
Yeah.
Don't worry, Sheila. Life's too short. let's focus on that particular aspect. In fact, for once, as it is the last Midweek Drive Morning Edition of 2015, I'm going to invite you to select a specific note from the universe. So would you like to give me a number between 2 and 26, please?
Oh, well, I hope it includes today, because today's is lovely, but I'll go for 21.
You've gone for 21. OK, interesting. OK, here is the official 21 note from the universe, or will be in a few seconds once Mr. Dooley has actually got himself sorted out. I thank you.
To set the record straight, however cool you think it might be to have an out-of-body experience floating over your house, flying through space, traversing the past, present, and future, let me tell you, it'll never be as cool as being in the one you now have, walking barefoot in the grass, floating on the sun-drenched pool, or dancing alone in the dark. You so fly the universe. Trust me, from here, getting into body is considered the most sacred of all sacreds.
Well, I've often said these shows should be like out-of-body experiences, that you kind of float through like an astral traveller. It's a voice coming out of our computer, our radio. What's happening? Strange, mysterious, sort of wondrous things. There we are. Mary, would you like to put those last two questions to Sheila Jones, please?
Yes. Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today?
I have enormously. Thank you.
Great. And will you be joining us next year?
If I am invited, for sure. Yeah,
and, yes. And I think it's only fair that we can actually move from Ghoul to the studio once again, because Sheila has been in the studio, but not for quite some time. So
Very nice.
Not that far away. And besides, without Sheila, our electronic systems of Christmas cards would have just been lost completely. So once again, result. Sheila, yours is in the post. Take care. Speak very
Christmas.
Soon. Have a great time.
Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas, everybody.
Yes, bye.
Bye.
They said there'll be snow at Christmas. They said there'll be peace on earth. But instead it just kept on raining. A veil of tears for the virgin birth. I remember one Christmas morning.
Hello, I'm Tracy Edger.
And the distant choir. And the peal of a bell and that Christmas tree smell. Eyes full of tinsel and fire. They sold me a dream of Christmas. They sold me a sire night.
Simple is a maxim that clearly echoes across the centuries, really, and probably none more so than when you're referring to food. And with a recent survey by Harvester Restaurants demonstrating that an overwhelming 93% of British folk say that modern restaurant food is far too trendy for its own good, and it would be much better to return to the good old days of simple, honest food cooked well, we're delighted to be able to welcome to the Midweek Drive today the legendary food historian and broadcaster extraordinaire, of whom even William Sitwell is probably in awe, if he admits it, on a weekly basis. That would be Saren Evans-Charrington. How are you, Saren?
I'm very well. I like my introduction. Can I have that every morning?
Well, of course, Saren. No worries whatsoever. And we've also got from Harvester Restaurants the wonderful Joe Hudson. Good morning, Joe.
Morning.
Saren, if we can come to you to start off with, I mean, it would seem that, is there a kind of kickback against all of the fancy, arty-farty scenarios that come through? You think, drizzle this, drizzle that, etc. Let's just eat the food. Let's keep it simple.
You know, it's a saying I've been saying for years, actually. And I think where this starts from is we start off in our food history with really good, wholesome food. You know, it doesn't matter what it looks like on the plate. It doesn't matter what it's in, as long as it's wholesome and it tastes good. And that's what food is all about, really, isn't it? Food is about sharing. Food is about good nutritional balance. And it's about getting good, wholesome food inside of you. It shouldn't be whether we've got a drizzle in the right place or a sprig of this or a dressing of that. But it became like that, and I think it all started after the Second World War. We come through the war, we have rationing ends in 1954. Quite frankly, we are fed up to the back teeth of having wholesome food. We're fed up of making do. We're fed up of having to use cheap cuts, you know, use techniques that make our foods go further or make them taste better or whatever, eke the rations out. And so we decide, right, we're going to have whatever food we want, plenty of it. And, you know, actually, let's forget about it being wholesome and good. Let's go with a bit of frivolity and a bit of silliness. And we start doing things sort of in the late 50s, 60s, like like, you know, setting things into jellies and aspic and things like that, which is an old tradition. Oh. But, you know, things like, you know, oh, let's get a tin of Tynes tomato soup and pop it in some gelatin and, you know, use that as a salad ring, or let's do all other silly things like that, you know, like stuff an avocado with something. And so we go down the idea of, you know, sort of food that is sort of more about the style of it than it is about the substance. What happens from there is we then start going more into continental ideas in the 70s. You know, we want foreign food, things that are a bit exotic. You know, foreign travel's taken off, so we want that type of thing. 80s, we start getting into wanting the salads and our dressings and our side salads start coming in, and all of that idea comes in. And then the 90s, we really start, you know, we've got to have a balsamic drizzle with everything, and a glaze and this and that. And I think actually we just got a bit tired of it, and we just said, actually, what are we doing with this food? Are we going to hang it on the wall, or are we going to eat it? I think that's where we're at now.
And of course, so, we do have that health fact. I mean, we mentioned our regular weekly correspondent, William Sitwell. He's working on a book which effectively is going back to the Second World War and rationing, and actually claiming it's a far healthier diet. And from what you've just said there, actually that would seem to echo that ultimately, yes, we've had all these trends. We had obviously the onset of food fusion that developed, and of course the shift in popular tastes and so on. I tend to blame the French in certain instances as well for pressurizing us in this country to actually go elsewhere.
But you know, going right the way through history, we have had an obsession with following the French cuisine.
Exactly.
So I think we can rightly blame them. Why not?
Indeed. But you know, from the sort of general perspective that we're looking for, one would suggest that actually it is important. I mean, particularly if we look at sort of the trends and you know, without mentioning the obesity in its full sort of scenario, clearly there are issues to be had from keeping it simple, keeping it basic. I mean, if I can bring in Joe at this particular point, your average customer at Harvester, from that perspective, and clearly, you know, they'll have their own sort of likings and so on, do they prefer the kind of more basic, wholesome, tasty food?
I think what we're finding is our customers actually like to have choice. So they like to have fresh food, quality food, and the choice to be able to decide how much or how little of something they want to actually have and serve themselves. And I think in terms of quality as well, I think that's much more of a, you know, it's more about the quality of the product. So the quality of the fish, the quality of the meat. And that's what we're also seeing. And I think this also this trend towards more sort of barbecue or smoked flavours. We're certainly seeing that with our sort of push at the moment, and our sort of, it's just flying out the doors, really, the smoked pork ribs and things like pulled pork as well. So,
well, I think, I've often said if pork ribs could fly, it's a different entirely.
Yes, yeah, there's
it does. I mean, and this, of course,
going to comedy.
Yeah. Oh, we do our best, as many of my students say. From the point of view of technology, of course, I mean, you mentioned pork ribs, brisket, etc. The Torrey kiln in Scotland, pre-war, of course, 1939, pre-Second World War, etc. That would seem, Saren, from the technological perspective, to have been a game changer.
Well, it was really. I mean, it's a brilliant development. And it's interesting, actually, to see it going into a modern usage. You know, I mean, I understand that there's been a few refinements in the techniques, you know, because technology is advanced. But it's interesting to see somebody like Harvester, you know, sort of going back and actually looking at history and using a technique that was used back, you know, in 1939. It's certainly that, you know, things like the pork ribs, the brisket, the pulled pork and things like that that are now on these restaurant menus that, you know, are obviously sort of, should we say, driving restaurant trends at the moment in Britain.
Interesting. And if we're talking about driving restaurant trends in Britain, it was mentioned obviously in the middle of that little piece with Saren Evans Charrington and Joe Hudson. It can only be the one and only William Sitwell. How are you, William?
Yeah, good morning.
Excellent. Not remote in the rural today, but still possibly likely to be cut off at any second. But still, it's the excitement that makes life interesting. William?
Oh, I am remote. I am rural.
No,
you can count on that.
Excellent. And Northampton is all the better for it. That's important. Or is it that London scenario? Can I introduce you to the Chief Executive Officer of the Lincolnshire Agricultural Society? Yes, she is with us once again, Jane Southall.
Hello.
Good morning.
And Claire Margerrison, still with us from, of course, the University of Lincoln, but she's heading back to Harrogate tomorrow morning.
I am indeed, yes. Hi, William.
In case you're wondering, Mary Dancy, we've actually just shot her. No, only kidding. She's gone off. She's sought out various other bits and pieces. It's important. Wonderful Nigella was the strap line on December the 9th of Your Good Self, of course, getting together with Nigella and just partying down, I suspect, William, or was it all you were doing, shall we say? Was there more to it than that, or can you not say?
Well, she was just a guest on my little radio show.
Yeah, you see, this is it. That's, of course, Soho Radio, which, of course, you can download the podcast for, because we're quite happy to sort of share the wonderment and joy, and hopefully in 2016 we'll come and see you at work there.
Yep. Don't be too shocked. It's a modest operation. Nothing like your flash setup.
And sometimes in London areas, you have to cope with what you're given. It's the important thing. Jane, any questions you want to put to William Sitwell? Again, the open invitation is there. Sally Maddy was saying he's always invited to these kind of things. He has been to the University of Lincoln before. He has actually been to Lincoln to promote his book and various other bits and pieces. We haven't actually had him at a Lincolnshire show as yet.
Oh, well, there's a challenge for you then, Alex, isn't there, really? Hi, William. No, I was just thinking, food-wise and that, if we carry on with what the talk is, what people are talking about, I think people like to try different things now in different restaurants, don't they? And they like more variety. Is that how you see things are changing?
Oh, certainly. I mean, you know, in this country now, we have more variety than I think anyone could ever have imagined.
Yeah.
I mean, it's extraordinary, and I mean, I'm lucky because I work in London, and I know that city has a restaurant, a cafe, an eatery for every price point from every country in the world. And I think that you find that this country, I think unique, in fact, across the world, you know, there may be a perception that sometimes we're a little bit less than welcoming for migrants. But the reality is we love their food and we embrace their food, because you only have to go into drive up the high street of a provincial town, whether it's Bedford or, God help us, Lincoln, and you will be able to count. I mean, literally, I drove to Bedford the other day. My son had a tennis tournament there, and there must have been three Japanese restaurants. There was a Chinese, there was a Malaysian place, there was a Thai, there was sort of eight Indian restaurants, there was French, Italian. It's unbelievable. There's no other country that you see that food culture spread up and down the high streets of towns. Plus the fact that our supermarkets are very sophisticated beasts these days, and you can get what you want when you want it at all times of the day. And, you know, if you want some za'atar, you can get that. You know, you can get exotic drinks. I think that the problem is really there's almost too much choice now. And we have so much knowledge. We know more about nutrition than we ever knew before. But we're getting fatter than ever. So maybe we need to, a bit like the link you were talking about before, maybe we need food controls, but who knows? But we're in a good place in many ways, but the realities are also worrying about the statistics that obesity is costing our country more than terrorism. So there's a few things to ponder there. But, I mean, come on, let's face it, next week we're just going to put on the calories. What the hell, you know, go for a walk.
Well, it's a New Year's resolution to take them off again, isn't it?
I thought there were possible a series which could be action-oriented called The Tubby Terrorists. You know, sort of terrorists who are slightly overweight, over-obese. It's just a thought, you know. I sort of just put it into the ether, you know. Whether it's bought, I don't know. Claire, thoughts from yourself?
Yeah, I think that what you say about the fact that we have this plethora, I guess, of like all these different restaurants and different types of food. Is there anything you've tried recently that you didn't think you would like, or that you wouldn't have expected yourself to try that you have?
That's a very good question. I keep thinking I should like kimchi. And wherever I go, I get offered kimchi, left, right and centre. I get out of a car, I get in the underground, people seem to be offering me kimchi wherever I go. But I'm yet to really fully embrace the concept of fermented cabbage, but I'm up for it. As to whether I there's so many nice things on offer. I mean, am I experimental? People will experiment on me. I can't think of it. It's a good question. The answer is no, but I keep on trying.
And as I quoted yesterday on the Midweek Drive, William was indeed the originator of the phrase, it looks like a car crash in Toy Town.
Yes.
On the classic MasterChef scenario. Still echoes and resonates. It's one of those magical moments. And as we continue to head into 2016, because that's where we're heading. In any way,
terrifying,
shape or form. I know. William, have you got any Christmas messages or festive thoughts you'd like to share with the nation? For one generation, ruling the nation with version.
Sorry. If you don't like them, just kill them.
And there we have it, another classic scenario. William, it's been a joy and a delight to have connected with your good self over the last 12 months in various countries and across the whole base. Can we look forward to more of the same in 2016?
Why not? It grounds me. You give me that centre of gravity. Where would I be without you?
Well, a round of applause for William Sitwell, please. And of course, next year your book will be in the shops and ready for Christmas, presumably. Your next book, should say.
Well, yeah, I've got a bit of work to do on that, but you're terrifying me.
You can do it.
You can do it. Just as Ian Lennox said, the best way to continue writing is to actually leave a bit of a cliffhanger, and then when you return to it, you've got, this is where it's a cliffhanger ending. Happy Christmas, William.
And likewise to you and all and everyone in the village.
To you and all your family, your neighbours and your friends, may all your days be happy with the joy that never ends. May peace and love surround you at Christmas time and all the whole year through. May you find the sweet fulfillment in everything you do. May your days be blessed with the very, very best, both now and the whole year through. It says so in my Christmas card to you and all your family, your neighbors and your friends. May all your days happy with the joy that never ends. May peace and love surround you at Christmas time and all the whole year through. At Christmas time and all the whole year through.
From their only Christmas album, the Partridge Family Christmas album, and my Christmas card to you. Do you have a cat, Jane?
No. I've got children.
Fair points. Exactly. And Claire?
No, I don't. I have a mad dog called Casper.
Because in the latest update from Professor Fiona Moore, of course, and we'll be speaking to her in a few seconds from now, she's updated 6 reasons to be thankful for your cat. 1, warms your heart, warms your seat. 3, cuddle buddy, alarm clock buddy, beautiful friend, and of course, beautiful paperweight. So there we are. The classic lines in terms of why you should be grateful. Yeah, exactly.
I miss my dog. I can't wait to go give him a big hug when I get home.
And your dog is called?
Casper.
There we are. Casper.
It's crazy.
The friendly dog.
Yes.
Named after one of the 3 wise men, presumably.
Yes, of course.
Add to that, of course, something which is just so wonderful. I think it needs to be read out in full Lord form. And as you can see, Jane, there, the classic sort of cat scenario. I'm sorry, Fiona, we're just entertaining ourselves by looking at your Facebook updates and thinking, that's a good one. Look at that. You got an image of a cat with a snake with the strap line. I can't wait to give Mum this gift. She didn't feel like the mouse yesterday or the bug last night, but this is perfection. Sums up the whole thing, really. I presume that's why
the ancient Egyptians actually originally, it's believed, domesticated cats to kill snakes, not mice.
Yeah. I did not know
that.
And that's why we always like to wrap up the year with a little bit of Moore-esque wisdom. It's like not so much old Moore's almanac, but young Moore's almanac, the Canadian version.
You're so kind. We're getting there. We're getting towards the old Moore-esque.
It's all wondrous to connect with you. Is Alan there by any chance, or is he out and about?
I'm here, yeah.
He's here. You see, there we are. Alan Stevens and Fiona Moore, a wonderful thing. Of course, this year they were here in Lincoln for Telefantasy and Society. Shortly after Fiona was officially the proud recipient of a professorship, so she's Professor Fiona Moore.
Very nice.
Royal Holloway College, London. Some great stuff there. And Alan, of course, who's just the Emperor of the Universe. I mean, every sense of the word, so it's good stuff there. But Jane, as yet, I don't think they've actually been to the Lincolnshire Showground. However, given their love and affection for all things geek and wonderful sort of connections within that, and again, if we actually return to Fiona's webpage, we can see that indeed in her little sort of status there, we see a wonderful brandishing of a red police box.
All right.
But even more than that, the Fiona Moore with, of course, ray gun. Does that or does that not look like somebody who would be ideal for Geeks Lincoln Comic Con on the 9th of July?
Yes, I think so.
Absolutely. It goes without saying. Is this the first Lincoln Comic Con that you've ever hosted at the Lincolnshire Showground?
It is, yeah.
Well,
something different.
And it, absolutely. I think I suggested it a couple of years ago. It was worth pursuing for that. What do you think? I mean, Fiona, what advice would you give, and indeed, Alan, it's a question for both of you, really, what advice would you give the Chief Executive Officer of the Lincolnshire Agricultural Society, or Director, Jane Southall, on coping with geeks, in inverted commas, Lincoln Comic Con on the 9th of July?
Shooting.
Shooting seems to be coming in quite a lot today, doesn't it? Really? You know, we're not advocating that. Yeah, we're not advocating, and we'd like to have a gun-free Christmas. You know, it's not really, unless of course you're using water pistols and so on.
Replica weapons are fine, particularly if they're fantasy weapons.
Yes, mm-hmm. There we are. So you know, let's come to you first, Fiona. What are the secrets? Because I mean, you know, between the two, you usually sort of manage to get what about half a dozen conventions and events that you cover your year, from the science fiction weekender through to, well, name a whole range of sort of things. Obviously, there's Dr. Hemi Allen is the editor of Celestial Toy Room, which is the go-to Doctor Who magazine that you ever want, really. Forget that other Tom Spilsbury publication. You see the shameless plug I gave you, Alan, there?
I was reading through it recently, and the Doctor Who magazine, because I bought them, right from the very issue one when I was 13 years old. Mm-hmm. I still get there. I don't actually read it now, but when I was in the Forest of Dean recently, I did, and it's got better a lot recently. A few years back, when Russell T. Davis sort of became producer, he just kind of had a friend of his doing everything, and a lot of people sort of lost work, and now he's gone. It's more egalitarian again, and it's improved. So yeah.
So, thumbs up. Anyway, the question still remains. Allowing for the fact that on the 10th of June you got Elton John, Sir Elton John, obviously, with the wonderful Crazy Night Tour. Then you have this Lincolnshire show, the Lincolnshire show, 22nd to 23rd of June. You got the UK Masters between the 2nd and 3rd of July, and then the first ever... we've had Comic Cons in Lincoln, to a point, etc. There's one that was actually in the showground and various other bits of music. So, of course, we had Telefantasy Society, which is more of a symposium as opposed to a sort of Comic Con event. But question sort of again. I'm sure, Jane, you'd like to find out what Alan and Fiona would recommend for the customers. We can ask, obviously, Sam Stone.
Well, the question was,
what do you look for in a good Comic Con? What should the Lincolnshire Showground
good
ensure?
Comic.
Yes. Good. Yeah, no, not a good answer.
Interesting guests, variety of activities, I'd say. Plenty of space for people to do their own thing, because people come to Comic Cons for all sorts of stuff. You've got the cosplayers, you've got the autograph collectors, you've got the people who've come to see panels, and you've got people who've come to buy stuff. You know, so as I said, I'd plan for a variety of activities. Thinking of what I've seen work well, there's one year I remember SF Weekender had a gaming corner, which seemed to work quite well, particularly with the younger kids. But with also
another choking guest.
Sorry, it's the damp. You know, the unusual. It's such a warm December. The garden out back's got potatoes and strawberries, and I just saw a crocus coming up, and I'm thinking, good heavens, this is not right.
It's Easter. It's Easter, Fiona. It's,
yeah,
you know, don't worry about the thing from that point of view.
The Christ, resurrection of Christ, yeah, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Bring it on.
Exactly.
So
So I think variety. Of course, I suspect, Jane, in this particular instance, do you have to worry about the organisation? Is it a case of no, we've farmed that out, it's being looked after by other externals?
It is an event organiser that's hiring at the showground, but we still have to make sure that they cover everything, so we still sort of look at their event plan, etc.
Nice. That's what you call consummate professionalism. Don't get it everywhere, but it's good. You can always sort of work through that consummate professionalism. And, of course, we've got Derek Hamley. He might be sort of joining us. I think he's coming along for his first ever Lincolnshire show next year, actually, with us. So he's just started, as a lot of people are, moving into the Lincolnshire area. Of course, you met Derek last week, did you not, Claire?
Yes.
It's all great. And we've got Sam Stone, of course, and David J. Howe. It's obviously the place to be for geekdom and various other things. We might have lost John Gerald or headed south to London, but meanwhile lots of other folk have moved into the area, including, of course, Fraser Hines, the original companion from Patrick Troughton's era, called Jamie.
Is that Zukov trying to get in on the action?
He's just coming in and go at me.
Yeah.
He's their cat, by the way, Jane, just in case you think it's some sort of Russian-Soviet poet.
He
wants to answer your question.
Or a euphemism, you know. And just for Zukov... Okay, we haven't talked about the comedy curry night at the showground, Jane. So, well, go on. These have proved to be phenomenally successful. It's now in its fifth year and proving to be a recipe for success at the showground. What can we look forward to on the comedy curry night, which, of course, comes up on Friday, the 25th of March, 2016?
Okay, well, it is at the fifth year we've done this. It's sort of an event. It's a Friday night, so we have four comedians. And it's just something a bit different, and it is comedy and a curry, and I think, but it also gives people who probably don't normally come to the showground an opportunity to see who we are and what we're about.
Have you ever been to a comedy curry night, Fiona?
I honestly can say I've never been to a comedy curry night.
Exactly. I first met Fiona at a curry place in my...
Yes, you did.
Well,
there wasn't much comedy going on.
I thought I was quite amusing.
Yes, but that was a bonus rather than a feature.
Yeah.
I'm just looking up Kevin Day, who apparently is a comedian born in 1965. Mm. The reason I'm looking him up is because there was a programme on Lays Back on BBC5. BBC5. Channel 5.
They're expanding.
Yeah, well, they're cutting back, aren't they? Called, The Best of the Worst of British 70s TV.
Do you know, I saw that actually on Monday. At least I saw 1971, 72, 73, 74. I gave up in 75, and by the time 76 had arrived, I'd fallen asleep. So, nice catch.
Yeah, well, I think
the decade itself, yeah.
I think this programme will probably itself be, on a... on the worst of the noughties,
the tragedy is really though that at least when the 70s were bad, they were bad in a spectacular way that you can just sort of sit there open mouthed and go, I can't believe somebody did that.
Exactly.
It seems to me that the bad of the 2010s, you can't even get a program.
And there we have it. So, clearly sort of cut off in every sense of the word there. We will return. Don't worry. That's what happens when you got a cat who basically sort of had enough. Decided quite simply, I can't take this anymore. I'm going to actually just stand over the phone and just not worry at all. Still, it does actually allow us to give an airing to the official Midweek Drive top Christmas tune that was voted for, of course, last week. This is Glenn Hodges. We had a choice of five. We could have had the worst Christmas ever. We could have had Little Saint Nick get lost, or Little Jack Frost get lost, in fact. But no, this was the winner. Santa's Coming Round This Time Next Week by... Do you remember the artist, Claire? Glenn Hodges!
Santa Claus, not only for the younger boys and girls, looking for a melody filled with magic of the world. Once a year he comes around and tiptoes in the loft, empty in a case, make way through the chimney some way. Santa's coming round, Santa's coming round, Santa's coming around, yeah, this time next week.
And And you're quite right, Claire, that when you do actually simply press redial on the phone and you get a lady who answers at the other end and you say, so presumably you were cut off by the cats then, she doesn't have a clue what we're talking about. And it's the redial, it doesn't know where you're going to take it. Have we now restored communications between Staines and Lincoln? Or have
I don't know what happened. The phone just went
completely dead. Yeah.
No signal, no nothing. I was ringing the studio on my mobile just because I was thinking we wanted to let you know that.
Let's try it again. Kevin Day. Kevin Day.
You have to look in a mirror and say it three times fast.
Please. We need to ask you, obviously, as we started off this show an hour and a plus ago, speaking to Richard Fitzwilliams, as we did last night with Tara Bennett, both of whom kind of raving about the latest incarnation of the cash cow that Walt Disney have in Star Wars. Will you be going to see it? Have you been to see it? Is it a case of...
The only problem is that with Star Wars or any major thing when it comes on is you know, Channel 5 put out loads of really bad documentaries about it. Mm. I mean, Fiona caught the last 5 minutes of one last week and recorded and said, I recorded it, so we watched it last night. And it was pretty badly put together and uninformative and gushing, I think, is the word. It was overwritten and...
Funnier for what it didn't say than what it did.
Yeah. I mean, probably the funniest bit was when they mentioned the first prequel and didn't mention number two at all, and then said the Force Awakens. Apparently, it will be
better.
It will be more gritty and won't be using so much green screen, which I suppose
incisive
a criticism, wasn't it? So, but it wasn't, the actual film itself. I mean, I didn't go to won't be going tonight because it's £25. A pop.
If you want it on the big screen as opposed to Netflix.
What?
If you want it on the big screen as opposed to, Netflix or other distribution channels, you've got it.
But the one I want to see is that I want to see it on camcorder.
Yeah.
So it goes in there and camcorders it.
Richard Fitzwilliams would appreciate that. Just putting a camcorder to a nice little teeny weeny view from that point of view.
Yeah. No, I think I'm looking for. I mean, the reviews are a bit strange. I read one New Statesman which was attacking it. But then again, the guy hated all of Star Wars, so he's not going to be a positive review, is it? But I think most people seem to think it was, better than the prequels and borrows a lot from the first film, which, of course, as the first film was box office, $1.5 billion. I can understand them going that way.
Well, they're looking to clear $4 billion, I think, to be comfortable, which is expected to clear the $4 billion mark, which is really, Jane, the sort of things you look at Lincoln, really, isn't it? You looked at $4 billion minimum, really, otherwise what's the point?
Yeah, exactly.
I can't see that, though, because I was watching that, looking at that thing last night, there was a sort of graph on one of the internet things, and the first film, was $1.5 billion. I suppose that's the accumulation. Was that the box office at the time? Was that accumulation over all these years? I don't know.
I would have thought probably accumulation, of course there was the re-release back in 20 years ago with the director's cut, special effects and so on.
I was thinking about that, yeah. I mean, actually, that was the first time I saw Empire Strikes Back. Hmm. I hadn't seen it before. The director's cut was the first. Because people kept saying to me, "Is there Star Wars?" And I said, look, they've altered it and put these silly characters in it. And then
like
I watched
Doctor
Empire Strikes Back and said, I really enjoyed that. And Fiona said, they've ruined it by putting these stupid characters in. Yeah. And I said, I didn't know they put stupid characters in that one because it was new to me. But Fiona probably expressed her hatred of the new bit. there were two good bits, wasn't there, wasn't it, when they put those panels on the walls?
Actually, Empire Strikes Back is one that I don't particularly hate the new version of because I thought they were actually... fairly sparing with the CGI on.
Oh yeah, sorry, it was Revenge of the Jedi.
It was Return of the Jedi that I really didn't like because on the one hand, I have some sympathy because the puppets the Jabba the Hutt puppets impressive, but the band and some of the other puppets do look a little bit 1983, But that having been said, their streets better than that sort of weird CGI Muppet thing that they replaced them with, and continually doing all these cutaways to Boba Fett, where you're sort of like, why, why? Mm. And it just sort of seemed like it was some kind of misguided attempt to make it more cartoony and funny. And it's like, no, Jabba the Hutt's palace is not supposed to be cartoony and funny. The guy is supposed to be, the character is so clearly based on Baron Harkonnen that you've really got to go there, you know?
Anyway, the point of how over Channel 5 documentary on Star Wars was that they had an interview with Jeremy Bullock, and he was saying, yes, I played, quick, what was his name again?
Boba Fett.
And he had this, you know, he had to have say this line, like, you know, take the prisoners. He said, I had this helmet on, so, you know, is that okay? No, can you say it again? And of course, they then would cut to the video version or the film version, and they would play it. But of course, it isn't him doing the line there, because they've redubbed it with another guy, haven't they? Mm. You know.
And that's part of the mystery of the festive season, in many ways. A glorious mystery, but one which we'll actually take with us as the whole procedure continues. Jane, would you like to put those last two questions to Alan Stevens and Professor Fiona Moore?
Yes, hello. Have you enjoyed your conversation with us today?
Oh, certainly, yeah.
Yeah, interesting, interesting. What happened there? Yeah.
Good. And will you be joining us again in the future?
Well, I don't know. Except Alex. And when's Thursday? We're in... Where are we?
We're going to be in Vienna next Thursday.
Yeah. So. I'll be in Middlesbrough, so you make no point whatsoever.
We'll be here, don't worry.
Vienna, Middlesbrough, Lincoln, it's all Harrogate.
Oh, yeah, yeah, just, it's all you know, world.
Exactly. We'll bond spiritually. I'm sure 2016, post the Doctor Who Christmas special, the return of River Song, lots of things to talk about.
Grumble, grumble, grumble.
So the answer is they will return. And I wonder, actually, would we have actually had K9 without R2-D2 and C-3PO?
Yeah.
Yeah. There we are, you see.
Would
so,
we? Why?
Because the 10 for cute androids was way bigger than R2-D2 and C-3PO.
I was watching the info stuff on The Invisible Enemy, which is Canon's first story, and apparently they came up with Canon before R2-D2. You know, before they knew about Star Wars. I mean,
this is the thing. The 70s, you know, you had development of personal computers, and you also, at the same time, had the...
And you had Huey, Dewey, and Louie in Silent Running.
Absolutely, yeah. Huey, Dewey, and Louie. You had...
Robbie the Robot, back in Forbidden Planet.
That's more of the 50s robot craze than the 70s.
And you could also say that Chameleon is no connection whatsoever with C-3PO at all, in any way, shape.
Chameleon?
Chameleon was just a misguided idea on somebody's part.
Idea on somebody's part.
Really, you say if you look at C-3PO, he comes from the Maria robot, doesn't he? From 1923.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. 1926, actually, Metropolis.
Yeah. It's even clearer if you.
Well, you were there. You would know.
Yeah.
It's even clearer if you look at the concept art.
And there we have it. Alan Stevens and Fiona Moore will return. Round of applause for them.
Bye bye.
Bye. Happy Christmas. Hope you have a good time.
Back with Disney.
We wish you a Merry Christmas, we wish you a Merry Christmas, we wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. We wish you a Merry Christmas, we wish you a Merry Christmas, we wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Good tidings we bring to you and your kin. Good tidings for Christmas and a Happy New Year. We wish you a Merry Christmas, we wish you a Merry Christmas, we wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Good tidings we bring to you and your kin. Good tidings for Christmas and a Happy New Year. We wish you a Merry Christmas, we wish you a Merry Christmas, we wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. We wish you a Merry Christmas, we wish you a Merry Christmas, we wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Gosh, wasn't that fun?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, Well, there we have it, you see. Goofy and more, of course, the original Disney and best. So thanks to Mary Dancy, Claire Margerison, and, of course, Jane Southall for co-presenting today. Thanks to Richard Fitzwilliams, Ian Lennox, Sheila Jones, William Sitwell, Saren Evans, Charrington, and the White Wednesday folk, and Alan Stevens and Fiona Moore, of course. And thank you, dear listener, for being with us. Jane, any Christmas final message or New Year message from the Lincolnshire Agricultural Society or just from Jane Southall?
No, I just like the opportunity to wish everyone a very happy Christmas and best wishes for 2016.
I endorse that. I'm pleased you managed to get him because otherwise we would have had 2016 without any studio visits from you at all. In fact, that would have been impossible to cope with. It's been a Lincolnshire Agricultural Society takeover as well. Claire, have you enjoyed your sequence?
I have indeed, yes. Course, here's to next year.
Exactly, yes. And then, of course, to our other midweek drivettes, to Emma, to Jessica, to Katie and so on. They're out there. And, you know, they always see it's a midweek drivette, always a midweek drivette, basically.
Exactly.
Doing the sort of stuff, whether they're seeing Star Wars or not, as the case may be. From everyone here, all the very best. Don't forget, of course, still lots of good stuff coming up. This evening, Claire is back on again.
I am.
With the Inspired On Air. Yep. Programme, which we ran yesterday, and we've got a whole range of other factors, including sound and Nick's vision, taking place over the next couple of Thursdays. And I've even put together all six podcasts of our classic movie reviews, so you can actually have the director's cuts and the podcasts of Metropolis, of Forbidden Planet, of Dark Star, of Things to Come, and of
Logan's Run
in 2001 A Space Odyssey. So it's joy unbounded, really, plus heaps of other great stuff. I believe that Jeff Thompson actually takes over the slot next week for the breakfast show, so lots of traffic and travel and weather reports to look forward to.
Fabulous.
Splendid. We won't say Happy Easter because who knows, it may actually turn differently over the whole sort of things that happen. That's it though, folks. It's time to say Happy Christmas. So a one, two, three.
Happy Christmas.